This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
My name is Kerry and I'm from Lancashire. And I first started listening to the OTI podcast about 2 years ago. I've been really looking at wanting to change my daily drinking for a few years and really felt like I needed to change my relationship with alcohol. So I binge listened to the podcast, which I thought were fantastic, and then heard about the OTI community. So I joined up when I started off doing Sober October. Really, it's been an absolute game changer. The community is just amazing. It picks you up if you're feeling a bit down. The members support you and they celebrate your wins. I really don't think I would have be where I am now if it wasn't for the OTI community. So all I can say is give it a go. What have you got to lose?
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Fantastic. How exciting. I'm always excited when we've got a guest on the podcast. Welcome to Over the Influence. I get dead giddy. It's an embarrassment, really. You think I'd learn, but I never do. Welcome to Over the Influence. My name is Sharon Hartley, a.k.a. Shaz, a.k.a. Shazza. I am still alcohol-free. It is nothing short of a miracle. Without going into it all, if you've been listening to Over the Influence before, you'll know all our background stories. Just a quick recap in case you are joining us for the first time. And if you are joining us for the first time, welcome. It is wonderful to have you on board. I am approaching 3 years alcohol-free next month. I'm going to stop counting days. I'm going to stop it. It's 1,000 and something or other. 3 years alcohol-free in September. I still can't believe it. It is still fantastic. I wouldn't change it for the world. And I think it's safe to say now, you know, I can proudly say, I don't drink. I just don't do that thing anymore. I'm getting carried away again. This was meant to be a short intro. We've got a guest to speak to. Okay, so I am not doing this alone. There is background Ben. Please say hello.
Hello. I'm the producer of this podcast. Just over a year alcohol-free. Woo-hoo. Never intended to do it.
Amazing.
Met these two. They were banging on about how great it was. Thought I'd give it a try for 3 months. And I love it. I'm so happy to be over a year.
Was it the last episode that really tickled me and you were like, yeah, I met these two, and at first I just thought, yeah, whatever, not that inspirational. You made me laugh.
I listened back to that and I got my words mixed up, like I'm doing again now. Look, I'm Freddie, tell us about you.
Come on, Freddie.
Hello, I'm Freddie. I am very, very excited to be here. I'm coming up to 1,000 days alcohol free.
Yay!
Regular listeners will know this is usually the part of the show when I say something like, I used to be stressed, depressed, hardworking, blah, blah, blah. And then I stopped drinking and I did all these physical activities, blah, blah, blah. But today's guest intimidates me quite a lot on the physical front. So I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say that I stopped drinking and I found inner peace, a slight bit of calmness. I started to love that person that I saw in the mirror, and I started very slowly to sort my bloody life out, and I'm still on that journey. And I'm going to be a little bit quieter in today's episode because I need to go and run and see a man soon, and he's going to jab me with something sharp, and hopefully it's going to be a vaccine. But we'll see what happens on that front. So I am going to have to love you and leave you soon. But I'm very excited to be here. And I am super, super excited about our guest today. And now I'm going to introduce
Freddy, we discussed where you sort of, what you do now, you introduce the guest.
We do. And we get the best guests on this podcast because we are the most professional. We are not only the world's favourite alcohol-free podcast, we are the most professional. And you know it's going to be a good one because I've written something down.
Yes. Are you ready?
Are you ready? Y'all ready for this? By George, we have discovered a truly top-notch guest for today's episode. He's a 20-year veteran of the fitness and well-being industry and has delivered over 17,000 hours of client time as a trainer and a coach. And here's where it gets impressive. He's run 10 back-to-back marathons, whatever. He's done two 100-mile ultramarathons, all right, fine, and an Ironman, great, and other ultra-endurance events, if you like that sort of thing. But most importantly, he gives people the motivation, inspiration, and education to change their lives. And he's giving me a little bit of perspiration because he's the kind of man that I'd like to wake up to every day. It's my pleasure to introduce to you the legend that is George Anderson.
Oh, Freddie.
Oh, my goodness.
Sazza, thank you for that introduction. How am I ever going to live up to that introduction? I don't know.
It was worth the gap, wasn't
George,
it?
Already have.
Worth the pause, yes, absolutely.
George, it's great to have you here. And because I know you and me have spoken for a while, and you know, I came on your podcast a while back now. But firstly, I say it is really a pleasure to have you on here because you are very much seen as a true expert in the fitness and wellbeing industry. I know you've coached a lot of high profile people. You've spoken at a lot of high profile events. But for anyone that doesn't know who you are, tell us a bit about yourself and your background.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what I do now is in coaching and speaking all around well-being. And I'd say well-being and performance. You know, I started out about 20 years ago as a personal trainer. And back then it was called the health and fitness industry. And it sort of evolved. I think just in general, not just my own life and career, but the industry itself has evolved to be much more holistic, much more around well-being and mental health as well as physical health. Not just about how you look, but how you feel as well. And, you know, I've evolved with my own education and my own understanding and the way that I approach things over those years as well. I do a lot less of the physical training with my clients now. It's a lot more about the mindset and resilience and well-being coaching, building habits, bridging the gap between knowing and doing, all of those good things. And yeah, as you mentioned, they're about speaking as well, presenting, training various groups and organizations. So that's how I fill my time these days.
Amazing. I love it. And correct me if I'm wrong, George, but you're a number of years alcohol-free as well. Is that correct?
It is correct. Embarrassingly, Freddie, listening to all of you tell us how long it's been. I was sitting here as I was preparing for this podcast this evening thinking, actually, how long has it been? And I think I take that as a good sign that I can't remember. It's been at least 6 years, somewhere between 6 and 8 years.
Wow.
in that region. I'd have to work it out because I remember I was on a holiday. So I just need to look back through my photograph albums and find out what year I went to Rhodes. And then I will know for sure. But I didn't get a chance to do that. So,
but yeah, it's been
a while. We'll do that to a person. I've had a few holidays in Rhodes back, I think, when I was a fresh-faced, not so innocent 17-year-old, Freddie. I think when I came back from Rhodes, I think I had to go to certain clinics after that and also reassess my relationship with alcohol.
Yeah, well, I can remember getting halfway through the holiday, and it was just the family holiday. I was there, my in-laws were there, there with all the kids, well, all three of them, and it wasn't any massive bender that I'd been on. It was just a normal, you know, they have a couple of cocktails during the day, a couple of beers with dinner maybe. And I was out for a meal with my wife on this particular evening halfway through the holiday. And I don't know, I just woke up that next morning, no hangover, no headache. Not, as I said, it wasn't a big night. And I just had this incredible clarity that I'm not going to drink anymore. And literally, that was it. I didn't make a big thing. I knew that if I was going to stop, I wasn't going to say, when I get home, once I finish this holiday, then I will stop. I knew that if this was something that was actually the right thing for me to do at that time, then that was the day to do it, the day that I had that moment of clarity, if you will.
Can I jump in and ask, just to rewind a bit further, George, and a bit more about your past and your drinking history? I mean, we've had varying degrees of drinkers on the podcast. Everybody that we've spoken to has become alcohol free for whatever reason, but there's such a vast scale. You know, you talk about people wanting to give up alcohol, or they needed to give up alcohol. You know, in the main, everybody we've spoken to, it's not vodka on your cornflakes type drinking, the scale is so vast, and there's, as the Andy Ramage calls it, the middle lane drinker.
Middle lane.
Yeah, the grey area drinker. Where were you on that scale, and what prompted you to stop?
Yeah, well, I certainly wasn't at Freddie's level. Let's put it that way. Freddie, you do things to a very high standard, including drinking when you were
I
at
certainly
it,
but... do. I wore it as a badge of honour, which probably wasn't a good thing.
Yeah, so for me, I think, you know, it's all very complicated, I think, now as I try to unravel it and understand it. But I wasn't a massive drinker on a daily basis. I would drink... You know, if I was just in the house at the weekend, I'd have a few beers, some gin and tonics, maybe some wine on a Friday with my wife, you know, get merry, a little bit drunk perhaps, and then get up on a Saturday morning, go and teach a boot camp, look after the kids during the day, do stuff, family stuff, and then maybe have a few drinks on the Saturday as well. And so, you know, no problem. It's no big deal because I can handle this. I'm functioning. I'm able to go and train and teach boot camps and do all those physical fitness things. The thing for me is I never really got massive hangovers, but I did feel for probably 4 or 5 days after a kind of a massive bender that at the time I sort of put it down and described it as a paranoia. And I felt this sort of a bit sketched out, and I'd be again going about personal training, work with clients, doing all of my things. And so I was getting on okay, but I just felt a little bit uneasy. Now, when I look back at that, it's anxiety. Like, that's exactly what it was. It just elevated my levels of anxiety. I didn't really kind of know that that's what it was at the time because I had very little experience with that. And so to bring it back to your question, Shaz, about like, what was it? What was the trigger? There wasn't really one big thing. I hadn't been building up to this. I think I've always had in my mind that at some point I would probably stop drinking. I didn't think I'd be in my mid-30s. And I was also reading the Jason Vale book as well, which a client had finished reading, How to Kick the Drink, or Kick the Drink Easily, I think it's called. And a client who was a self-confessed, she worked in marketing and branding, and she, you know, go out with big boozy lunches with clients, and she'd drunk pretty much every day, she said, since she was about 14, 15 years old. Very successful, but that's what she did. She read this book and she stopped drinking overnight. I thought, well, I'm curious, not because I necessarily wanted to stop drinking at that point, but I was curious as to what was in the book that took her to that point where she decided she was going to stop. So I read that book and I finished it, I think, just before I went on that holiday to Rhodes, or maybe it was even when I was there. And I know that that would have had a part to play. I know that it had a big part to play in that ultimate decision that actually... I'm stopping. And I never said that I was going to give up drinking. That was one of the big things in the book. You know, I wasn't giving it up. I was choosing something else instead. And that was a really an important and big sort of mindset shift that I think was a part of the reason why it was so easy for me at the time to actually just be 100% on board with it and never look back.
I think that's the way you've just reframed that there, talking about not giving anything up. I think for many of our listeners and community members, when they start out on this alcohol-free journey, it's like, oh my God, I can't do this and I won't be able to do that and nothing will be fun again and I'm giving this up and I'm giving that up. You're not. You're gaining so much, aren't you? But you've got to go through that process, George, in the beginning in order to be able to look back and go, oh my God, I've gained sleep, I've gained time, yeah. I've gained clarity. I didn't know that I had mega anxiety for years linked to the drinking, but until I removed it, I was like, ah, okay, that's what that is.
Yeah.
And it's about what you gain, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think my story is maybe, you know, it isn't as extreme as perhaps some of the others that you've had on the podcast or that we hear about, even if it's in that middle lane. You know, I'm pretty sure nobody you've had in your podcast was actually sleeping on a park bench drinking vodka for breakfast from a brown paper bag. But I think part of it for me as well was that I had this weird thing, whereas I was this personal trainer. I was the fitness guy. I was the running guy. I hadn't done any of those kind of running things that Freddie mentioned in the introduction at that point, but I was doing marathons. I was the training partner with a Reading Half Marathon at the time, which is a big event here in the UK. And so I almost felt like I didn't want to be pigeonholed as, oh, I'm some, you know, ultra disciplined, just boring, all about fitness, obsessive. I didn't want to be put into that little box. And so for me, I think that alcohol was almost a way of saying, actually, no, I'm not like that. I've got this edge to me as well. And I was hanging out with lots of athletes at the time, and we all did it. We'd all go out there and get really drunk. And I think probably others as well had this same thing of being, you know, fit and focused on sport as well as their degrees, but needing to have that release, needing to have that, well, it's not just about the training, it's not just about the competing. But then when it came to stopping, obviously my life had moved on quite a lot from those hedonistic early 20s through having a family and going out less. But actually what I found was that I was, this sort of anxiety was starting to kick in a little bit more, this paranoia, even after just a low level sort of session, if you will. So though I wasn't having these massive hangovers, I was still choosing this life of control. I guess that's the big thing for me. It was more about control than not feeling like rubbish for 5 days afterwards. But that shift towards choosing something rather than choosing something different rather than giving something up was, I think that was kind of important for me.
George, thank you for answering that. Hold that thought. I know Freddie has to disappear now, weirdly, off the podcast. It's not because he's being sacked by myself and Ben. It's not because he's...
I'm trying my best.
It's because you're intimidated, isn't it, by George, Freddie?
He can't handle it.
After that intro.
I'm packing my running shoes, jab. I'm going home. Now, of course, I'm getting jabbed in 39 minutes and I don't know where I'm going for that jab. So I need to do that and sort the kids out and do a packed lunch. And thank goodness I'm sober is all I can say. But I will say thank you now, George. And I totally agree with what you're saying. And I always say, if you make alcohol a battle of willpower, you can never win. If you're there every day saying to yourself, I really want this thing, but I'm not going to let myself have it, you're never, ever going to win, because we're human. And that's the years and years of the centuries and millennium of evolution. We can't beat willpower. It's all about thinking, I want something more than alcohol. I want that new life more than I want that old drinking life. And that's how we can crack it. And they say leave on a heist. That's what I'm going to try and do. And I'm going to go and run and get my Jimmy Jam bottoms off for a start and then get jabbed.
George, now that Freddie's gone, I feel like we can delve into things.
Well,
let's
relax.
More.
Let's talk about Freddie.
Let's talk about Freddie.
George, I'm obviously the mental benefits of giving up alcohol is something we talk about a lot, and I think that anxiety is a word that 10 years ago was it even used in society? I don't know. I can't remember anxiety really being spoken about openly anyway. In terms of it's in everybody's vocabulary. If you've never experienced, you probably know somebody who has, or if you don't know somebody who has, then you at least are aware of anxiety and just how many, also the kind of different types and layers and depth. And you know, I feel like as a society we are a bit more educated on that, and I'm sure that we'll have some questions come in from our audience who are watching, because obviously our podcast is now with a live studio, well, Zoom audience, our OTI Over the Influence members. It's lovely to see you. I would like to talk about the physical side of it for a second, because you are fit.
You are really fit.
But I think when I gave up booze just over a year ago, I was nearly 3 stone heavier than I am now. I'm not ever going to run ultra marathons. That's not my bag. I'm probably never going to run for the bus. I'd just get the next one. I'm that kind of character. I do my Instagram workouts every morning. But I've lost quite a lot of weight, and I think it's because, not just in terms of the calories that are in, you know, you drink with alcohol. I can't believe a pint Moretti. I'd down 8 pints of Moretti in the pub. 350 calories a pint. Like, that's your daily allowance for a man, which is outrageous. But I don't think it was just giving up the booze and taking away those calories that helped me to lose weight. I think it was also that kind of motivation to, I'm not hungover on a Saturday morning. I can get up and do a workout on a Saturday morning instead of lying in bed wishing I was dead. I think what I'm really interested in, you were obviously in great physical condition when you were drinking because you were doing all these amazing things. If your body is already working pretty well. Do you still notice a difference? Did you notice any physical differences when you gave up alcohol?
I think it's a great question because I can't honestly say that there was a massive shift, a massive change. I mean, I'm 42 years old now. So I was I was 35. So it has been 7 years. There we go. I just worked out how long it's been since I stopped drinking. So at that time, when I was 35, I was running marathons, half marathons. I was a 400 meter runner when I was at university. So I've always done stuff ever since I was about 10 or 8 years old, I think I was, when I started running with my dad. So I've always been, you know, kind of exercise and physical activity has always been a really important part of my life. So I can't say that I noticed a massive shift, positive shift, having stopped drinking. But I'd also had several periods of time in my life where I had had at least a month where I hadn't drunk, not because of Stoptober or Dry January or anything. This is probably before all of that sort of thing came in. But it was in January when you're at university, you've got exams at the end of January, and it's the indoor track season. So most of the athletes, most of the people who I used to hang around with, we'd go out, but we just wouldn't drink. And it was really easy then too. So I kind of had that experience of having a month of continuing life normal, but without any booze. So what I noticed over the period of time of having that month was that I did feel better. It did make a difference to my physical performance when I was training, when I was competing. And so I've no doubt whatsoever that that is now the same case, that's the case now. However, it's probably less that it has accelerated my performance, and it's more that I've taken the brakes off, which is really what alcohol is. It takes a while. It's not just you get over the hangover after a day or two, and then you're back to normal again. It takes many days before you're properly back and you've really worked all those toxins out of your system. And in that time, you've lost some percentage points on the training potential. So if you go out and do a workout, then you're not going to get as much out of it if you've got alcohol still cursing around your system. What I would also say is that if I'm absolutely certain, Ben, that if I was drinking now, it would just be smashing me. And I just, you know, if I don't get a good night's sleep, I'm okay the next day, but boy, can I feel it. And to combine that with trying to process toxins, I get like a food hangover. If I don't eat perfectly, but if I have a day where I'm just scoffing all of the wrong things, then I feel atrocious the next day. Once again, all those toxins trying to be processed out of the system. So I'm much more conscious now, I think, of how sensitive my system is to anything that I put into it that isn't designed to be put into my body. So just the imagining what it would be like drinking alcohol now and waking up the next day and trying to function at a high level just is unimaginable.
George, you mentioned that everyone you hung out with drank booze. Did you have that classic feeling of just being left out?
Shaz, that was one of the biggest worries for me. And in fact, there were a couple of mates that I had, I still have, fortunately, which kind of gives you a clue to the ending of this story, that I only knew through alcohol. I think, you know, anybody who decides that they're going to give up drinking, stop drinking, probably have those relationships where they're just bound by those manic nights out, fueled by copious amounts of booze. And so one of my friends he worked abroad, and so we'd only come back once or twice a year. And then we'd always, the three of us, four or five of us, maybe we'll go out and we'd just have a really big session. And they were the ones that had been hitting me the hardest. And we had one of these get-togethers planned fairly soon, maybe a month or two after I decided that I was going to stop drinking. And I was really worried about how it was going to go down, about how they were going to respond to that. And I was really concerned about rejection or just having them taking the piss out of me all night, or it just being a constant source of poking fun or jibes.
People don't take the piss out of you, though, do they? I mean, I wouldn't take the piss out. If this is real life and we weren't on Zoom, the last thing I would do is take the piss out of you to your face. I'm going to be honest.
You'd be surprised, Ben. You'd be surprised. But the thing is, it couldn't have been further from reality. Now, my what I imagined was going to be like, and, you know, fair play to them, I totally underestimated them. And that this, you know, our bonds of friendship went deeper than the bottle of, you know, a bottle of rum or whatever. And we, they, there's some questions, you know, curiosity. In fact, I messaged them this morning and asked them, you know, what did you think? What were some of your recollections from that time? And they both said, you know, I thought maybe it's a bit extreme to go right to the end, but, you know, didn't really care that much. And we just, they drank, had a few bottles of wine, some beers and some cocktails later on in the evening. And I didn't. And we just had a great time. And it was such a relief to have had that experience. So I think anybody who's considering making that decision and making changing their relationship with alcohol, and they're worried about what their friends will think, is to speak to them, to talk to them, and just actually find out what they really think, before they allow themselves to get worried and worked up with something that we just don't know how other people feel or would feel or think before we've actually done something. So I was pleasantly surprised, and 7 years later, they're still very, very good friends of mine.
It's lovely to hear that about friends, family being supportive. I mean, in terms of kind of, do you care about what people that aren't that close to you think? Because I do. My girlfriend always says this to me. She said, why do you give a shit what other people think? And I'm like, I don't know. I've got such a great circle of friends. I've got a really support. I'm very, very lucky to have wonderful people in my life. But I do still care what someone on Instagram thinks sometimes. Do you just not have that? Do you just...
Oh, no, I don't think you can never completely get away from that. And there's a good reason for it as well, which I'll get to. But first, I've got a question for you, Ben, on that front, which is when it comes to alcohol, and I know you said it's been about a year now since you stopped, how many people have rejected you publicly or privately and maybe, you know, not accepted your decision as a result of, you know, well, posting on Instagram or just private conversations? How many times has it happened?
So my brother was initially skeptical. Actually, within a few days, he came round, and it was a time when we were watching the football and we could see each other as long as we were less than six people or whatever the bloody rule was at the time. And he brought round a crate of alcohol-free beers for me so we could watch the football together. And that was kind of his symbol to say, I support you. Most people question me on it and then don't give a shit. But then I did have one friend who really upset me, actually. I won't say what they said, but it was pretty bad language, kind of, well, what are you doing that for, you insert word here, you're not gonna be as fun, and that it did upset me quite a lot, actually.
Yeah, so, you know, anytime somebody does that, and it's, you know, it's interesting to hear that you actually had that response, but it's usually a reflection of them rather than of you. And although it doesn't stop you from caring about it, it's still, when you can understand it, it's not a problem about you. It's not a reflection or an attack on you as a person. It's your behavior means this to somebody else. And I think being able to separate yourself from that, the behavior and the person, how it affects other people, because it does affect other people in the same way that your drinking probably affects other people as well, maybe relationships or other things you're able to do. Time, mental and emotional bandwidth that you have for other people when you've had a few drinks, for example. And an understanding that can help to at least get you over that caringness of what you think about what other people think. And the reason why we do care about what other people think is because we are hardwired to care about it, because we are tribal as, you know, as we've evolved. You know, you've created the wonderful over the influence community. Now, why is it that this has been such a success? Because people are drawn to being a part of something. And what we fear more than anything else is rejection. And so we care so much about it. There's a part in our brain called the amygdala, which essentially is sensing threat constantly, physical threat, psychological threat. And as soon as somebody starts to even imply that they are rejecting you, the amygdala goes apeshit and says, whoa, hang on a second, let's make you feel really bad so that you change your mind and start going back to drinking again, because you want to make sure that this person's happy and doesn't reject you. And so that's where that caring instinct comes from. And again, once you understand that and you can separate the behavior and the person and realize that it's a them problem, not a you problem, then it makes it easier to acknowledge that emotional response that you have, but to still overcome it and not let it to dictate or to influence what you then go on and do next.
George, there's somebody on this call who's just put a message in the chat box, and I've known Ian for probably best part of a year now. And hello, Ian, by the way. It's lovely to see you. Thumbs up there. It's great. I'm loving having community members on the podcast. It's fantastic. So Ian shared with me ages and ages ago, and he's done his own podcast as well. So he's talked about all this. I'm not saying anything new here, Ian, revealing any secrets. When Ian was drinking, he cared what people thought. He was worried that he'd upset them. And the anxiety that you mentioned, Ian, that used to last for days and days and days afterwards. Oh, God, what do people think? What do people think? Ian is now well over a year alcohol free. It might be 14, 15 months, something like that. Smashing it. Absolutely fantastic. And yet I know that Ian still cares what people think about his not drinking. And Ian's put in here, I just care way too much working on this because it shouldn't really matter what people think of our not drinking. What top tips and advice, George, would you give to Ian, who sort of struggled with worrying about what people think when he was drinking and now he's not?
Yeah, again, it goes back to this whole reason that why we feel this way in the first place is we don't like rejection. And if we feel that we are, then we are going to start feeling pretty awful. And that anxiety, that worry, that doubt, that sense of insecurity as well. And that's one of the things that could or will drive us to doing things that perhaps we don't really want to do. I know that was a big driver for some of my drinking habits when I was younger, was that I wanted to be accepted. I wanted to be, of note. I wanted to be somebody who was in the stories. And so that's why I try to do just a little bit more than everybody else when it came to boozing. And I think to acknowledge and to recognize that it's not about stopping caring, it's about understanding the reasons why we care what other people think. And if it is somebody who's important to us, the fact, Ian, I saw you, you've put something up, a great quote, actually, those that matter don't care and those that care don't matter, which is a wonderful way of expressing it, I think. As you said, it should be your new mantra. It's easy to say you shouldn't care about what people think. It's another thing altogether to actually live that. And I think instead of trying to not care, as we're often told we shouldn't, we do want to care, but then to make some judgmental, some judgments and some decisions about actually, is that somebody who is still adding value to my life? Is the only reason that I'm in their life or they're in my life because of alcohol? And now I don't have that. Is there anything still left? And that was the case with my two friends and many other friends as well, but it was just those two friends who were very quickly after that decision to stop drinking in my case, which was why it was so intense in terms of how I felt going into that get together. And it was just such a different situation afterwards. And I would have cared, actually, if they had rejected me, I'd have cared. But I've also been prepared to have walked away from it. In the end, I didn't have to do that. But I think being prepared to change, being prepared to not judge somebody for their opinions, for their, they're not where you are. And it's not to say that we're sitting on this, up here somewhere and saying, oh, look, I'm better than you now, I've stopped drinking, which is always, I think, the ex-drinker's worry, isn't it? That you're going to be seen as some pious do-gooder. Oh, I've seen the light, now you should stop drinking as well, I'm going to start preaching at you. And I've always been very careful not to do that. But I think once you get into conversations with some of these people and start maybe trying to understand where they're coming from, what's really at the root of their uneasiness with your decision to stop drinking, which doesn't really affect them. Once you can understand that and start getting into those conversations, it becomes a little bit easier. It's a bit like talking about mental health, as we spoke about earlier, Ben. And if you're talking about mental health, all of a sudden it's like, whew, I feel better. It feels lighter. And I think the same thing is true about alcohol as well. If you can talk about it and talk about your reasons for stopping and say, well, I'm not judging you, I'm not saying you have to, and I'd really like to continue to be friends, but then to understand it from their perspective as well, then opening those doors of communication can really help with that, getting over the caring too much thing.
Somebody said to me, they actually use that phrase, and it really upset me, and it still bothers me to this day. A friend of 20 years said, to quote, "Do you think you're better than us now?" And I was like, oh my God, no. But I do think I'm a damn sight better than the person I was 3 years ago. And it rings in my ears, and it still really upsets me. It's like, is that what I come across as? You know, that, oh my God, it was the worst. It was the absolute pain.
But again, I think it's just a reflection on the other person as well. And again, that's not to sit in judgment in any way, shape or form. Because, you know, I can remember many nights out where I was drinking and somebody was there and they were sober. And I'd be like, oh, just have a bloody drink, will you? Just loosen up, lighten up. And so I can remember feeling that way, but that was because I didn't want to be the one who they were watching me and thinking, what an idiot, and judging me again. So it comes back to that sense of self, sense of security, and wanting to be a part of something.
We're Sound Rebel, and we produce this podcast.
We make loads of entertainment shows like this one, but we also make informative and educational podcasts for businesses. We can help with the whole production process, from idea development through to podcast distribution to all the major podcast apps like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Email hello@soundrebel.co.uk now, and we'll get back to you as soon as we can.
Right, back to the episode.
Something I'd love to talk to you about, George, bearing in mind your skill set, what you do every single day, helping, you know, over your career, must be thousands of people by now, right? The 20-year career?
Yeah, quite a few.
There's something I love on your website. I just like to read this word for word. "Most of us don't just need more information, we need more implementation. I help my clients bridge the gap between knowing and doing." The reason I wanted to bring that specific quote up is, I know we've got a lot of people who listen to this podcast who are sober curious. They are considering life without alcohol. They haven't actually taken the plunge and decided to remove alcohol yet. Why is it that we spend so long thinking about something? Why is it so hard sometimes to take the very first step towards actually doing it and bridging that gap between information and implementation?
Yeah, well, thanks. I'm glad that resonated with you, that quote from the website. And I do believe it's the problem that most people have, not just with alcohol, but with anything. You know, most of us, you know what we should be doing, but we just don't do it. And it's not just about, well, that's because you don't realize that an apple is better for you than a pizza. You didn't realize that, so now you know it. Now you're going to go and eat apples instead of pizzas. Of course, that's nonsense. It's we're not just logical beings, we're these emotional, psychological beings as well. And so there's these huge chasms of ourselves that we have to overcome as well in the process of bridging this gap, right? So we know what to do, but we just don't do it. So how do we get from knowing to doing? And there are many different ways of approaching that and looking at it. I think with alcohol, it's something that's a little bit different, because what we're talking about a lot of the time is going alcohol free, which, as my friends pointed out to me, both 7 years ago and earlier today, that it's very final. It's like you're ending something. And yeah, sure, you're starting something else and you can look at it however you want, but it's still making one decision to stop this and start something else. And that then cascades into a whole heap of other decisions. And what do you do at Christmas time? What do you do at a wedding? What do you do when your partner is having a bottle of wine and wants someone to share it with? So you've got all of these decisions to make, and they're not all happening right now, which is different to, well, I want to get up tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock and go for a half hour run, right? That's something we either do or we don't do. We can say we want to do it, set the intentions, and then we do it or we don't do it. So I think alcohol is a little different, but we often put all of this pressure on ourselves to be perfect. And I know, again, you could say, well, if you're going alcohol free, then you're either alcohol free or you're not. But I think many people actually could really benefit by, and again, through many conversations, by just not necessarily stopping it completely, but just improving their relationship with alcohol. And instead of using it because they need it, instead of using it to anesthetize and to numb and to silence that voice in the evening, to have that me time, it's 1 o'clock. Let's just crash on the couch and just forget about the horrendous day I've just had. Instead of using it like that, to actually use it to, you know, to celebrate a wedding or a birthday or just to have those moments, that wasn't ever going to work for me. And I knew that because, you know, I often said, I'll just have one. And oh, I feel really buzzy now. I feel great. You know, I'll feel twice as great if I have two, and on it goes. And I'm actually the same now with caffeine, unfortunately. So yes, I've kind of switched over from the booze to the coffee. But I think that with alcohol, there are so many different elements to it when it comes to stopping. With other habits, then there's a great, I won't go into all the details of it now, but there's a great system for overcoming self-sabotaging behaviors that you already know you have a tendency towards. And it's called a WHOOP. Have you heard of that? Have you come across this before?
Never. The WHOOP?
No.
It's too,
to make some notes about this.
WOOP.
Self-sabotage is a skill. Yeah.
So it's basically two techniques. One, it's called mental contrasting, and that's the woo in the WHOOP. And then the P is implementation intentions, right? So I'll very quickly break it down. The wish is the W. Well, what do you want to achieve? What do you want to do? And that might be, I want to have a healthy breakfast. The outcome is, what's the benefit to you of doing that? Like, what do you hope to achieve? Maybe it's because it's going to have an accumulating effect. It's going to set me up for the day. It's going to help me lose weight. It's going to just make me feel better about myself, whatever it might be. So that's the outcome that you hope to achieve by doing the wish. The second O is for obstacles. And I find this is fascinating. So the second O of obstacles isn't, well, I might not have oats in to make porridge. It's, I might look at the Frosties and think, oh, I'll just have the Frosties this morning. I'm tired. I need some energy. Whatever it is that we do that undermines our best intentions, they're the obstacles that we have to overcome. If you then combine it with the P, which is the plan, which says, when I'm having my breakfast at 7 a.m., I will go for the porridge. Or when my alarm goes off at 6 a.m., I will yawn, stretch, and get out of bed. It's called an if-then. If my alarm goes off, then I will get out of bed. If I'm eating breakfast, then I will eat porridge. And it's incredibly effective. It's so simple, and you can use it in so many different areas. But if you work through the WHOOP, and it would work with alcohol as well, though, if I'm going out for a few drinks with my friends, then I will just drink sparkling mineral water. And it's having that actions on. That's what I'm going to do. That's the plan when I'm in that situation. And I would normally go, oh, sorry, I'll just have the one. If you know that that's what you would normally do, what do you actually want to do? Get really clear on that. Express it in that format. And you've just whooped yourself.
I'm gutted Freddie's not here for this, Ben.
He'd love that.
It's right He'd up his street. That. He'd like to whoop himself.
How many of us woo? And actually, we all need to whoop more. Like, I feel like I've wooed for a long time, but actually the difference is I now whoop. Like, the planning, it sounds so dull in a way, doesn't it? That structure and planning, but they are the words that are really important when it comes to achieving anything.
But that's right up your street, isn't it? Structure and planning, Ben. Oh, that's how you like to operate.
Structure.
You love structure.
Oh, give me
structure.
A colour-coded spreadsheet and you already start to sweat. Oh, but is that, in terms of then coming back to that, taking the first step, you can't woo. You've got to whoop. Is that what you're saying? You've got to go through all four stages.
Yeah, I think even if you just took the general concept of it, then acknowledging what your tendencies are to undermine your best intentions, your self-sabotaging strategies. And I think we've all done it probably around New Year, right? We'll say, well, this time's going to be different. And based on what? Based on past experiences? Of course it's not. Nothing's different. So by recognizing that this is, you know what, actually, I really want to make some changes, but I know that this is what happens. You know, when I've had a really tough and stressful day and I'm tired at the end of the day and I come home and my partner offers me a glass of wine because I look stressed, I know that I just say, oh, sorry, go on then, please. Yeah, let's just have a drink. I'll just have the one. So if you know that that's what you do, then you can get upstream of this problem And you can maybe do something different apart from coming in. You could speak to your partner and say, look, if I'm stressed, please just give me, just cook the dinner, right? Don't offer me booze, because I know that I'll be weak at that point and I'll probably say yes, because that's what I've done before. And if you can identify what those self-sabotaging tendencies are, then you can put these plans in place in advance. But I think more fundamental to all of that is if you do slip up, if you do have a relapse, if you do have a drink, to get back on track at the next logical point. Don't wait. I have this other phrase, this other expression, fall down less, but get up faster. So if you can minimize the number of times that you have a lapse and you have a drink when you didn't really want to, minimize those, of course. But once you've had a drink, then don't go, oh, sorry, well, I've ruined it. I'll start again next month. Because then you're down for longer. So fall down less, get up faster.
Couple of comments, thank you, from the community members that are watching. George, I could listen to you probably for 5 hours straight, and there's loads we can talk about. Seriously, it's fascinating, honestly. And I really like the sound of your voice as well. I find it quite soothing. I just thought I'd get that in there as well, making me sound extra
thanks,
weird. You're more than welcome. So, back to the matter in hand. Thank you to Ian, who's messaged, and I think you've really helped Ian, George, this evening. So thank you so much for that. We were talking about the difficulties with friends, you know, questioning your decisions and making you feel a bit awkward. On the flip side of that, something that Neil has mentioned, which I just think is wonderful, when it's you are the alcohol-free lighthouse. Neil says, I've been surprised by the amount of people that are curious about alcohol-free life. I've received a couple of messages from friends asking about the benefits. And that is just wonderful, isn't it? Because people are watching and learning. And some people don't say anything, but they are watching what's changed in your life and the improvements that have been made. And it can be very visible, not just physically, with the improvements you experience physically, but the things that can happen in your life, new jobs, new relationships, just a more sparklier demeanour, that sort of thing, which I just think is awesome.
Yeah, it's so much easier these days as well, right? I know you had a guest on recently who was, he started an alcohol-free brand, was that correct?
Yes, Johnny, yeah. Johnny Johnson.
Yeah, Johnny Johnson. Yeah, and you know, it's just so much easier. Most bars and pubs have alcohol-free options, mocktails, alcohol-free beers. You go to the Tesco's, and there's a whole aisle dedicated to alcohol-free beers as well. So it's not like you've got to just drink water or cans of Coke all night. There are so many more options. So it's easier to do it and not feel like you're the weirdo just drinking pints of water all night. Although, you know, actually I've done that plenty of times. I don't care so much about that. But it's nice to have those options. So yeah, I think certainly if anybody is sober curious, just to your point as well, Shaz, a moment ago, you mentioned about, you know, just keep on exposing yourself to these things and actually asking questions and being ready just to experiment before you go and dive in with both feet.
Absolutely. And I just quickly want to mention Sarah as well, that put a message in the chat box a short time ago. I've got a close friend that has distanced themselves from me this summer holiday. We keep making plans and then she cancels at the last minute. Been there, done that, Sarah. As well, you know, all I'll say, I'm not here to give advice or anything, not qualified in anything at all, but just keep doing what you're doing, because it's all about you, basically. Sorry, I just interrupted there. One of my children came into the room, and they are banned from coming into the room, but because they don't listen to me, they just came into the room, and I'm just trying to go, get out. Sorry, George.
Come on, Shaz. We know it was your husband. We know he's trying to get him out the screen. I'm flirting here. Leave me alone.
I'm talking to George. I really like the way this episode has gone. Because sometimes, we do a bit of research about our guests, obviously, and find out certain things. But sometimes I just like to be surprised. And you've really surprised me tonight. It's been fantastic.
Good.
And I love the fact as well, as we've mentioned, there'll be so many people listening that and not necessarily alcohol free. And we don't want to be that podcast that goes, you must be alcohol free. It's the only way to be. If you're sober curious, it's a start. If you're just even questioning your relationship with alcohol, it's a start. And I love the fact, George, that you've come on here and gone, yeah, I removed it. It went really well. Can't remember how alcohol free, how long I've been doing this now. It's just the way it is. And it's obvious from what you do and you know, the way you help others and train others and guide others and all the rest of it. It suits you down to a T, doesn't it? It is marvellous. Thank you for sharing all your top tips. Like I said, we could probably talk to you for a good 5 hours. I know that the Over the Influence community members have really enjoyed it, so thank you for that. If people would like any further information about what you do, George, and your public speaking and all the rest of it, where can they find that info?
Over at bygeorgeanderson.com is the best place, and that will give you links to all of my other stuff that I get up to.
Well, we need to report back, don't we, to Freddie about the whooping. Freddie's going to really like this.
He loves a whoop.
He loves a whoop. George, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Cheers, guys.
Discover more shows on the Sound Rebel Network.
Like Men Lose Weight.
This is Men Lose Weight, a podcast about four blokes who partied hard through their 20s together, and now they think, maybe we should try and lose a bit of weight in their 30s together.
Be honest now, lads. Have you ever been in the middle of a personal trainer session and feigned an injury?
Guys, so I moved from Birmingham to Nottingham 2 years ago, right? Turns out I've been paying for a gym for 2 years that I live over 100 miles away from.
I guarantee at one point or another, he said, nothing tastes as good as skinny feels.
Obviously didn't try that pizza. Did you try that pizza that came out this year? The one good thing about 2020 where it's like KFC and pizza combined.
I have lost 3 pounds this week.
Just so you know the numbers, I've also lost 3 pounds this week.
Whoa!
I'm down to 17 stone four.
I have also lost 3 pounds this week.
What? You are joking me.
I am 1 pound down this week.
All
well
good,
done, mate.
We've all lost, progress. Which is definitely better than last week, boys. Well done.
A lot better than last week.
10 pounds in a week, boys.
What? That's like a that's more than my baby weighed when he was born, so we've lost that collectively in a week. So, I mean, if you want to look at that, that's pretty decent, isn't it?
Men Lose Weight from Sound Rebel. Listen now on your chosen podcast app.